Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Science Fiction. I'm Rob Wolf, your host. We're part of the New Books Network, where authors talk about their new books. And a little news this week, the network as a whole just had a day where we had over 56,000 downloads of our podcasts. That's 56,000 in a single day across all the different shows on the network. So thank you to all of you who listen to this show and any of the great shows on the New Books Network. Today's episode is the Monster Hunters on the Res edition. And I'm super excited to have as my guest Rebecca Roanhorse, whose book, Trail of Lightning, is not only a gripping future fable about gods and monsters in Indian country, but Rebecca has just picked up some prestigious awards just a couple days before this taping at the 76th Worldcon in San Jose. She won the John W. Campbell Award for Best New Writer and a Hugo Award for Best Short Story. And she also previously won a Nebula Award and was a Sturgeon and Locus Award finalist. And she's with me now from her home in New Mexico. Hello, Rebecca. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on your awards this past weekend.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
It's very exciting.
Yes. That's good. Yes, it is very exciting.
I can't wait to dive into the book, and yet I want to take a moment to ask about your career path. You went to Yale, you became a lawyer. What led you to arrive where you are today, writing award-winning science fiction and fantasy?
Well, I've always written. I think I wrote my first science fiction story in seventh grade when I turned a science report on the planets into this somewhat gripping tale about an astronaut on a suicide mission into the sun, and, you know, had all the sort of information that belonged in a science project, but I made it into this story, and my science teacher was not particularly impressed, but I loved it, and I sort of, you know, had the bug from there, and I've been writing for myself, you know, all my life, ever since then, on and off. And of course, I'm a huge science fiction and fantasy reader. And just, you know, gosh, I don't know, probably in 2013, I started to get serious about writing. You're right, I am a lawyer. but it is not a particularly emotionally fulfilling job for me. There are certain aspects of it that I enjoy, but that sort of creative side of me was sort of looking for something else to do. And I remember how much I love writing and what a comfort it is to me. And so I turned to that, and I actually joined a NaNoWriMo group. So my first novel, believe it or not, is a NaNoWriMo novel. And from that group, I joined a larger writing group with a couple of published authors that it continued past that November novel writing month. And as I got deeper and deeper into the story, you know, they were very encouraging and they were like, hey, you know, this is pretty good. I bet you could get this published. So I was like, huh, okay, well, I might try that. And then I went to VONA, which is Voices of Our Nation. It's a workshop for writers of color. And I actually workshopped the first chapter of the book with Marjorie Liu. who also just won a Hugo and also won an Eisner earlier this year for her work on Monstrous. And she read that beginning of my book and said, yes, you can get this published. This is fantastic. And I think that's when I really started to believe that it was possible. So thank you, Marjorie. But yeah, so it just kind of went from there.
And you've chosen to write fantasy and science fiction, but not include, it seems to me, some of your experience as a lawyer. In other words, some people who are lawyers or have experience in maybe law enforcement might write a police procedural or something noirish, but that's not where you've taken your work.
Right. But there is a lot of what I learned in law school or what I practiced in the book, actually. I specialized in federal Indian law. And so there are details in the book, like jurisdictional details about checkerboard zones, which are an actual real thing. And then I use them in the book because the book is set in a future world, right? Like the near future. So actually a lot comes through. And I first encountered traditional Navajo stories while studying Navajo law. That was one of the things that we had to learn to get a grounding in Navajo philosophy. And so I practice in the Navajo courts. I'm barred on the Navajo bar. So you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how much legal information is in my books.
That's great. And just for people who don't know about the checkerboards, that's a reference to one of the ways the U.S. government tried to take away Indian land by chopping it up into pieces so that it was, I'm probably mangling this, but so that there were white or Western people owning bits of land and next to, adjacent to indigenous owners. So it was no longer contiguous. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, you got it.
Can you tell our listeners about The Sixth World, which is the name of the series, of which Trail of Lightning is the first book? And I know that's a reference also that has a lot of meaning in Navajo culture.
Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah. So the book itself was sort of pitched as Indigenous Mad Max Fury Road. And so I think that speaks a little bit to the pacing of the book. It's sort of this fast-paced adventure and to the post-apocalyptic nature. But in this book, the outside world, sort of the world in general, has faced a climate apocalypse. And probably like 2/3 of the world are now underwater. So the climate change combined with other things like the New Madrid fault line earthquake and other issues have destroyed the government, sunk in most of the continent. And what is left is primarily the Western United States. And center of that is the Navajo Nation, which actually had the sort of foresight to build a wall around its land before all this, like all the horrors, sort of hit. And it's for lack of a better term, it's like a supernatural wall that was that the gods of the Navajo helped to build. And it protected them from some of the worst effects, including refugees and population and things like that. So there's a little bit of a political note to that as well. But practically, in Navajo traditional stories, they focus on an emergence story as opposed to sort of a creation story. So they believe that the Diné, the Navajo, have come up through a series of worlds, and we now are in the fifth world, the glittering world, although some say the fourth, depending on where you are on the res. It does vary a bit. And so it made sense. Oh, and so all of these worlds, or the majority of them, were destroyed through floods. And when the flooding came, the creatures that were living in the world, be they people or other beings, had to come up through the sky into like a new world. And so for climate change and for this mass flooding, it made sense that it would destroy this world as we know it and open up a new world where the beliefs and the gods and the heroes of Navajo stories walk the land again. And this world would be called the Sixth World.
And I think it's worth noting that this wall, which, as you say, is supernatural, you've portrayed it very dramatically. One side of it is made of turquoise. I think another side is abalone, maybe, and another side is jet.
Right. And each of those stones or shells are important in Navajo traditional stories as well. They each represent one of the four sacred mountains that surround Navajo land.
As you said, in the Sixth World, the gods and creatures from Navajo mythology return. And I wonder how many of them are based strictly on your research and your understanding of Navajo culture, and how much of it have you taken liberties with and is from your imagination?
The majority exist in one form or another in traditional Navajo stories, but not necessarily the way that I portrayed them. So, for example, there's in Navajo stories, there's the story of the hero twins, which you see actually in a number of Mesoamerican mythologies. So I did not make up a hero twin, but I did, you know, sort of take liberties with the personality, his personality, trying to keep it in line with what I had learned through stories of like who, you know, he was portrayed as in the stories. And then the monsters, again, I sort of riff off of, you know, various sort of base facts that I know about Navajo philosophy or Navajo cosmology. So they're grounded in sort of Navajo thought, but then I sort of run with them and create my own story around them.
And you do something similar, I think, with clans, which I know are an important part of Navajo understanding of identity in the real world and also in your book. But you've taken the notion of clans and you've added some magical dimensions. And I'm thinking particularly about the idea of clan powers.
Yeah, that's right. So when I came, when it was time to create a magic system, I knew I didn't want to base it in spirituality, because there's already sort of a mess in the New Age sort of world of thinking about Native American spiritualities as somehow magic, and yet other spiritualities are not. So I really wanted to avoid that. But what I did want to do is make it Navajo, make the magic system distinctly Navajo. And you're right, in the Navajo culture, clans are a big deal. You have four normally, depending on if your mom and dad are both Navajo, you can have up to four, I should say. And even if your mom and dad are not Navajo, there are clan names for other ethnicities too. Because one of the things that Navajos have always done is absorb other cultures and other people into their culture and make them Navajo. So I used those because I wanted them to be distinctly Navajo, the magic themselves. And then I wanted, so each of the magic system is also based on trauma. And so I wanted to take the things that are hard in life, I guess, like sort of this concept of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and sort of play with that and take the trauma that the characters have suffered and make their superpowers, for lack of a better term, I guess, come out of that. And I'm not saying that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is the philosophy they all adhere to. In fact, it's debated quite a bit in the book, and the characters don't agree that the powers that they have are necessarily good. Some characters think that they are not good, and in fact they are evil, or that they certainly are not gifts of the gods. So that's sort of the debate too. There's a larger sort of story around trauma and victims and survivors of trauma.
It's interesting that you mentioned trauma, because I was thinking about it as I was reading the book. Obviously, it is interwoven into the storytelling, but I thought the way you presented it was very original, because when people often talk about Native culture, they talk about historical trauma. And as far as I recall and noticed in the book, I didn't see any references to historical trauma in terms of what the Europeans did to Native culture. You created a place that doesn't exist in terms of its relationship to white or Western culture. The Dineta, did I say that right?
Dineta.
Dineta, the Navajo world or Navajo nation, is very much its own place, and it draws on its own culture and resources. And yet, as you say, there is a lot of trauma in the book. The monsters in the book are inflicting trauma, as they did on the main character, Maggie Hosky, who, when she was younger, saw her grandmother brutally murdered before her eyes. So I wondered if you could talk a little more about how you address this theme of trauma, but without referencing the history of the European invasion, which is how it's usually framed when people write or talk about Indian culture.
Right. So what I really wanted to do also with this story is create sort of a sovereign story. So I would place, you know, my book, and if you were going to sort of categorize it as sort of what you call an indigenous futurism type story, which means we're contemplating sort of an indigenous future. And I think you can do that in two ways. You can write something that is in conversation with colonialism, that discusses sort of, you know, this the effects of conquest and colonization, and like you said, historical trauma, you know, and things like that. And that's totally valid. That's an interesting story, and many other stories do that. I think my short story does that more than this book does, because in this book, I think the second way that you can sort of create indigenous futurisms is to create a sovereign story, a story that exists on its own, on native land, in native thought, with native characters and stories and process that doesn't have to be, or even really acknowledge, the larger white Western world. So this is not a story that even has any white folk in it, actually. So this is a story that is a Navajo-centric story. And that's on purpose. Yeah. And so that doesn't mean that there's not, you know, trauma in your life. I think everyone has to deal, you know, with certain levels of trauma. And I wanted to write a story where both the good guys and the bad guys, and some of the morally great characters, everyone was indigenous, although there is one family that is like a secondary characters that are African American. But I wanted to tell both sides. So I didn't want to have just sort of your character that, you know, is always good, you know, or always bad. I wanted to have a mix of everything to show different kinds of people with their different histories and the trauma that they bring to the table, and the sort of histories and stories that everyone, you know, brings to the table when they interact with other people. And I wanted it all to be Navajo.
Let's talk about Maggie Hosky, who is basically the star of the book. And she's a character who has internal conflicts about her powers as a monster hunter. She has clan powers that make her uniquely suited to the job. She's, and here I'm going to try to pronounce some Navajo, she is Honach Ani, which means walks around, and it refers to the fact that one of her powers is being lightning fast. And then she's also, in the words of the book, born for Hanani, I'm sure I mangled that, which means living arrow, and makes her, as she puts it, quote, really good at killing people.
That's right.
So can you tell me a little bit about Maggie and the internal conflict she feels and why you gave her these particular powers?
Sure. You know, so one aspect of the magic system that comes from trauma and is based on these clan powers is that they answer your need. So whatever your need might be in that moment of this thing happening to you, that's what the powers give you. And so in Maggie's case, you know, as you mentioned earlier, her sort of jumping off traumatic event was the murder of her grandmother. And I don't think that's too spoilery. I think you find that out in the first 100 pages or so, but now you know. And so what she needed then, what she needed in that moment, were those two powers. And so that was sort of what was given to her. But often the coping skills that we learn in dealing with trauma, especially childhood trauma, may serve us in the moment, but don't necessarily serve us as adults, right, or as we grow. And overcoming those, overcoming sort of the baggage, I guess, that comes with it and comes with that is part of Maggie's journey. And I think it's fair. I've had a reviewer say, like, Maggie is, you know, suffering from PTSD. And I wouldn't argue with that. I think that's definitely true. And she's, you know, has these sort of powers that, you know, are in a way metaphor for coping mechanisms that are not necessarily good. I mean, like you said, she makes her well-suited for the job. But, you know, maybe that's not the only job she should have. Maybe she could be a fuller human being than that. So we'll see. It's a 4-book series, so she's got a ways to go.
Well, I know your husband is Navajo, and you, as you said, lived in the Navajo Nation, are admitted to the Navajo Bar. But you yourself have heritage that is Okay Owinge and also African American. And I wondered how much you drew on your own life experience as someone with that background, in addition to drawing on Navajo culture.
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, I think every writer does. I think it would be, definitely us new writers do, you know, pretty hard actually to write characters, I think, that are some aspect of you or don't draw from, you know, the things that you know. So, yes, Maggie has definitely got a lot of me in her. I think that's fair to say. But I haven't killed anyone. I'm not really good at killing people or anything. But, you know, the whole, I think the themes of trauma and the themes of abandonment and abuse that come through in the story and that are a part of Maggie's character, I'll pull from my personal experiences, certainly.
There's so much I think people don't understand about Native American communities. And although your book is a fantasy and it's set in an apocalyptic future, I was wondering if you hope it will, as a side effect for people who are reading it, paint a more accurate picture of Indigenous America and its people, its strengths, its culture.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the book there that is for Navajo readers and for Native readers. Like specifically Navajo, there's a lot of Easter eggs, places they go, things they say that, you know, I hopefully will entertain, you know, Navajo folks will get a kick out of that. In the larger Native community, I've gotten emails and communications from people who tell me they've never seen places like what I talk about on the res, because, you know, this all takes place on the res, in a book. You know, they've never seen the details, you know, the fry bread, the way they covered the shoe with duct tape, the importance of blankets as trade and things like that. And I had one reader say she cried, you know, the whole way through because she's never gotten to see that. And I think issues like, you know, at the beginning of the book, it's made very clear that Maggie is an outsider, even in her own community, because of the powers that she has. And I think for Native readers, that should hit home really hard. I think that is an aspect of Native culture and Native communities that perhaps doesn't resonate quite as deeply because Native cultures are really centered around this whole community and belonging to community and what your role is and how that plays out. And I think the reader who had written me a note about that was sort of like, I see Maggie and she doesn't have this community. She lives alone. And if she doesn't have it, then who is she? How can she even exist? And I was like, exactly. You know, and so some folks will get that and, oh, you know, that emotional, like how on the outs she really is. And then some folks will be like, oh, yeah, well, that just sounds like every other, you know, badass woman or whatever, but like not for natives. For natives, that is like, that is bad stuff. And so this, you know, sort of growth and like healing, like back towards community is a theme I think you see in a lot of native work. And it's, you know, something that Maggie's going to have to go through too. So we'll see.
I wanted to talk just a little bit about the notion of your book being part of this genre or subgenre, indigenous futurism. I think your book is, you know, a wonderful book that is compelling for many reasons. One of them is the fact that it takes place in a Navajo future, but it's also just a wonderful book with all the wonderful ingredients of just plain old good storytelling and good writing and good thinking and good ideas. And I wonder if the label indigenous futurism isn't narrowing it and putting it into a category, or do you see it as maybe liberating it in some way or gratifying in some way because it's acknowledging something, as you said, that hasn't gotten a lot of attention in literature?
Yeah. You know, I don't, you know, it's interesting because I did just win the Hugo, and that is, you know, sort of a popular vote kind of thing. I know you have to join Worldcon, but unlike the Nebula, which is just science fiction writers and sometimes focuses a little more towards craft or whatever. And so winning that is like a real honor because I feel like, oh, my peers saw what I was trying to do and they appreciate that. But the Hugo is sort of like, did I like the story? Did I not like the story? You know, did it resonate with me as this individual reader or did it not? And it did. And so I don't think that, and that story is about appropriation and the commodification of culture. And it has a lot of sort of heavier themes, actually, I think, in it.
And just for listeners, we're talking about your short story, Welcome to Your Authentic Indian Experience, TM, trademark, which is what won the Hugo and the Nebula.
Right. And you can find it on Apex Magazine's website, or LeVar Burton recently read it on his podcast. So you can find it at LeVarBurtonReads.com because he does an awesome job and there's sound effects and all sorts of cool stuff. So,
well, we can put that in the show notes too.
Oh, okay. That would be great. Yeah. So I think, you know, something like that clearly I think falls into sort of an indigenous futurism thing because that story is about Native identity has appeal. I think that people want to hear that voice. It's a voice they haven't heard and perhaps before in science fiction and fantasy. And it's exciting and it's thoughtful, hopefully, or makes them think or it makes them think about things that they haven't thought about before or see something differently than perhaps they had before. And I try not to underestimate the reader. I think that readers want that kind of stuff. I mean, science fiction and fantasy readers on the whole are sort of forward thinkers, you know, sort of cutting edge. And I don't think that being labeled an indigenous futurist or having my work be labeled that way really holds it back. I would hope that people are not so shallow as to think that we don't want to read that because it has natives in it, you know, or something like that. Surely we're beyond that. And surely a good story is a good story. And that having natives in it, because a lot of people have never seen that perspective, might even make it a better story.
Well, it's definitely an excellent story. And the next book, Storm of Locusts, that's due for release in April 2019. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
And are you writing full time now, or are you still practicing law?
I'm still practicing law. So the writing gets done late at night or very early in the morning.
May you find all the time you need to complete the Sixth World series, because I think a lot of people are looking forward to finding out what happens to Maggie Hosky and her associates.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And then coming in 2020, I'll have a new series. So I'm just going to plug that, a book called Between Earth and Sky. And that's going to be more of an epic fantasy that's inspired by Anasazi culture.
Fantastic. Oh, great. Something to look forward to besides the presidential election in 2020.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining me today on New Books in Science Fiction.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Rob. I appreciate it.
My guest today has been Rebecca Roanhorse, author of Trail of Lightning, the first book in the Sixth World series, which came out this year from Saga Press, and it's the first of a planned 4 volumes. And as we just discussed, the next one, Storm of Locusts, is due for release in April 2019. Please subscribe to New Books in Science Fiction to hear interviews of your favorite science fiction authors. Our theme music is by Michael Aaron of QuiverNYC.com. The editor-in-chief of the New Books Network is Marshall Poe, and the editor is Leanne Wilson. Please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts if you haven't done so already. It helps people like yourself who love science fiction find the show. I'm Rob Wolf, author of The Alternate Universe. Thank you so much for listening.